Welcome to another edition of Second Amendment Radio here on FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here with you in studio with producer Chad Ellis. Unfortunately, my partner Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, is out this week on assignment, but he'll be back next week, and we still have a very exciting show for you. We're going to be talking to our old friend Austin Peterson, and we are going to replay, back by popular demand, we talked last week with Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, and we are going to replay that interview for you coming up in just a few minutes as well. Want to remind you that if you want to listen to this show, download this show absolutely free. You don't have to just listen to us on Saturdays. If you miss anything or you want to hear it again, you can download our podcast on our website, 971talk.com, or even better, the radio.com app. Just favorite the radio station on the radio.com app. It's absolutely free. Then you have access to all the podcasts here on the radio station, including Second Amendment Radio. Again, free, and you can take it with you everywhere you go. You also find us pretty much anywhere you download podcasts, but the radio.com app is pretty much the best place to do so. Also, you can follow the show on Facebook, Second Amendment Radio on Facebook, Southern Armory on Facebook, and of course, always check out Southern Armory for all the best deals and all self-defense, everything. Of course, firearms, but also tasers and pepper spray, everything you need to defend yourself. Of course, Southern Armory is found at southernarmory.com.
That's southernarmory.com.
Sorry, I kind of snuck up on you with that one.
Just a little.
Make sure you're ready. Follow Southern Armory on Facebook and ask your questions to Aaron there and watch for those live videos he does and check them out on southernarmory.com. We're going to break already because I want to leave as much time as possible for Austin Peterson. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So we're going to take a break and then we're going to have a long conversation with Austin Peterson. Don't go anywhere. It's Second Amendment Radio on FM News Talk 97.1. Are you playing Limp Bizkit?
Of course.
Of course?
Of course.
What does of course mean? Limp Bizkit?
Well, I thought, you know.
What'd you think?
I thought it was going to be.
Cool?
Yeah. At first.
Oh, that's a heck of a way to start. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio, FM News Talk 97.1. And yeah, I bet you that's the first time our guest has ever been introduced with Limp Bizkit. As I mentioned in the last segment, our old friend Austin Peterson joins us on the phone. Austin, when's the last time you rocked out to a little Limp Bizkit?
Oh, dude, I haven't done it for the Nookie since the 90s, man.
I was like looking at Chad like, what is he playing? And then I hear that the dulcet tones of Fred Durst, and you just there's nothing like it. All right, let's get this thing back going here. Austin, great to talk with you. For people who don't remember, I don't know how you couldn't. Austin's been on the show many, many times. Austin ran for Senate in 2018 here in the state of Missouri. Ran for was the runner up to the Libertarian Party for the presidential election in 2016, and now does radio on a daily basis in the state's capital in Jefferson City. Austin, you're a busy man. It's great to talk with you. How's it going?
Hey, good to talk to you as well. I feel like a real politician because I failed up. You know, that's what happens with all those politician types is that they don't fade. They don't fail. But if they do, they fail up. They always get a better position. So honestly, being a radio host is so much better than being a U.S. senator. That job would suck.
Yeah. So talk about real quick before we get going about the station you're on, the time you're on, how people can listen to you.
Sure, KWOS News Radio, 950 AM and 104.5 FM in Jeff City is 6 to 9 a.m. Central, Monday through Friday. So 18 hours is a whole lot of talking, Tony, and I'm really enjoying it. We're getting a lot of good feedback from the audience. You know, some people who are a little, nervous about all the changes that are going on because they've got a pretty radical libertarian now at the top of the day right in the Capitol. I feel like I'm shaking things up, but in a good way, you know?
Good for you. That's great. What's that like getting? Are you a morning person? Because I've worked every shift in radio, and mornings is the one that literally almost killed me.
You know, it is hard, and the adjustment was painful. I've learned that, like, naps in the middle of the day aren't helping me. I need to, like, you know, go to sleep at a decent time.
Yeah.
But I've always been kind of a morning person. When I went fishing as a kid with my dad, I was always the type to, like, be up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, you know, ready to go out the door. So it's not too difficult for me, but, you know, like, you kind of just, you got to find some meditation. Get a zen place, you know what I mean, and get yourself a routine. And, you know, I'm feeling healthy, happy, wealthy, and wise.
That's great. That's great. That's so good to hear. Yeah, I've always been a vampire. I've always been a late night guy. And so that morning shift, I could do overnights. I could do the show before yours, no problem. But the morning shift always hurt me real bad.
It hurts. It does. You know, it's one of the best damn jobs in the world, Tony, yeah. Being able to sit on your fat American butt and talk about freedom.
That's right. Let's do a little bit of that right now. So one of the things that we talk about very regularly on this show, Aaron Tarlow, my normal co-host, the owner of Southern Armory, is out this week on assignment, of course. But, you know, something that he and I talk about almost on a weekly basis are these red flag laws that we're seeing pop up all over the country. And we have seen them submitted even in the Missouri legislature. Thankfully, they haven't passed yet. But, you know, we had Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County in here last week. I think we're actually going to replay that interview coming up here in just a few minutes. And he is one of the many sheriffs across the country that has said if a red flag law ever gets passed in his district, he's not even going to enforce it. What are your thoughts on these red flag laws, and how diligent do we have to be in the state of Missouri that we don't have one of these things, you know, cropping up here?
Well, let me just say first that officer is an American hero, and he has my utmost respect. That is what public service is all about, and so I congratulate him. You know, I think that Missouri, we dodged a bullet this year. Sounds like the red flag bill that was coming down is not going to be passed. It didn't make it out of the committee, so we won't have to worry about that. I mean, listen, nobody likes domestic abusers, right? Police officers always say those are the worst kind of calls to respond to. You know, there are dangerous people out there that want to take the freedoms that we can enjoy, and they want to abuse those freedoms. And, you know, people who commit real crime should be punished. But we have this concept in the United States. It's a presumption of innocence. And essentially that is that until you've been convicted of a crime, until you've had due process, you can't take the guns. Remember Donald Trump said, I like to take the guns first and do due process second? You know, that's not how that works, actually. You got to get the due process first. You have to have a presumption of innocence. You know, people who do bad things should be punished, you know, and if you commit a violent crime, especially with a gun, you can lose that right. But people who have not committed a crime or people who are suspected of committing a crime do need to be able to defend themselves for various reasons. You know, essentially what a red flag law does is allows police or a spurned lover or a father or husband, you know, anybody could report you, and on just a tip itself could lose you your Second Amendment rights. And this gets tied up not into the questions of just domestic assault, but, you know, when you see these school shootings happening around the United States, people demand answers. So when the answers come down, it's usually Democrats spurring us on to gun control. But unfortunately, what we're seeing, Tony, right now is that the charge is being led by Republicans, you know, states like Florida with Marco Rubio, where they had the Parkland shooting. You know, in order to appease the aggrieved parents, you can understand that they would seek solutions, but unfortunately those solutions, in terms of what the politicians always push down on us, is a loss of liberty and a loss of rights.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it was something that I wanted to ask you about. And just to set the table for people who, we talk about it all the time, so I just assume that everybody knows what a red flag law is or a risk order protection is, but basically these laws, and there's a little bit of variance in, you know, the ones around the country, but basically it's a situation where if somebody can report you as a gun owner as being dangerous to yourself or others, and they can do so for any reason that they want, and if you live in an area where these red flag laws are the law, that then it not only allows, but it forces authorities to go to your house and take your guns away without your knowledge. You don't even know that this complaint has been filed against you until there's somebody knocking on your door telling you to give them your guns. And they take the guns, and then the process starts of you trying to prove your innocence. It's literally the exact opposite of innocent until proven guilty. You are guilty. You are assumed guilty until you prove your innocence. And you have to go through the long court process of trying to prove your innocence and maybe get your guns back. But it's you're going to be without them for months, maybe even years in some of these cases. And one anecdote that we always tell here that we got from our friends at the Missouri Firearms Coalition, there was a situation in New England. I think it was in Maryland or New York or New Hampshire, something. Over this past Thanksgiving in November, there was a family Thanksgiving dinner and two adult siblings got into an argument about guns and politics at the Thanksgiving dinner table, which you're not supposed to do, but they did. And this sister got mad at her brother and knew that a way to get back at him would be to call this red flag situation and have the police go over and get his guns. Well, the police showed up. This guy got into an altercation with the police and ended up getting shot. And then the sister complained and tried to go after the police and said, he wasn't a danger. I just was mad at him. I just wanted you to go take his gun.
I called the dogs on you, and then I got mad when the dogs ate the guy, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, Tony, it's gotten to the point where I've kind of checked the ideology of anybody before they enter my home. And I didn't used to feel like I needed to do something like that. But, you know, I'm kind of a gun collector. And, you know, I have some beautiful firearms that I like to display. And, you know, obviously it's not the kind of place where kids should be running around. But I don't have kids. I don't worry about that. But when people come into my house and I don't know if there's some loony liberal, if they see my 1911 on the stand, they're going to be like, oh, well, this is a guy that if I want to screw with him, I can certainly do so.
Yeah.
And you know, listen, Tony, I got a lot of people who want to take me down, man. I mean, I get threats a lot, you know, especially this last week after I went on the attack on Shannon Watts, the Moms Demand Action for Gun Control. I literally got an email from someone who said that they were going to do everything that they could. They were going to find every bit of personal information they could on me in order to try and destroy my life. Why do you think I carry guns now?
Yeah.
But it makes me, it has a chilling effect. It's kind of like what happens with free speech. You know, when you, what the government will do is they'll have a sacrificial lamb to make an example to the rest of us, you know, and it's because they want to have a chilling effect on the Second Amendment. Like, maybe you won't go buy that firearm. You know, it's too much trouble. You know, you don't want to engage in it. Maybe you've got a medical cannabis card in your state and it's in conflict with federal law for you to do these things. You know, there's all kinds of dangers that are involved. And you know what, again, and nobody who's committed a crime, anybody who has not committed a crime, you should have a presumption of innocence and there should be due process. If you have no victim, no crime. But this, essentially what this does is it continues to criminalize normal gun owners. You know, and it's just like the bump stock ban last year. And I hear from gun owners all the time, Tony, they're like, well, I don't have a bump stock. I'm like, what you're doing is you're setting a precedent so that you're criminalizing what was before an uncriminal activity. You're creating a whole new class of felons now, because now all the people who own bump stocks, including the one person that I gave one away to from my U.S. Senate campaign, if he kept that bump stock, he's a felon now.
Right.
I mean, that's ludicrous. Red flag laws, bump stock bans, you know, again, time to stop playing D on the Second Amendment. Time to go on the O. Time to go on the offense.
Yeah.
Time to start taking ground. Time to start being unapologetic about the Second Amendment, and don't kowtow to the mommy groups who come in and start doing the marionette show with the dead kids and saying, you need to feel bad about this, and we're taking your rights. I'll feel bad for you when a tragedy happens, but when you start trying to use it to take my rights away, you're chopping off slices, or the bologna slices, of my empathy.
It's such a great point. The bump stock thing is a great example of, like you said, playing defense. Well, a lot of people don't own bump stocks, and it's not really, it was kind of a niche little thing in the gun collectors or the gun owners community. And so if they want to come after bump stocks, let's just give them bump stocks. And then that's a victory for them. And now it just kind of opens the door. And it's like, well, if the bump stocks was so easy to get, then let's try to go get something else. Another thing you mentioned a few minutes ago, and I'm glad you mentioned specifically Florida, because that's a perfect example of a state that has a Republican majority in the House and the Senate and in the governor's mansion, and yet still passed a red flag law. And we're seeing that in states that there are strong Republican representatives that, you know, you'd think that, well, we're in the state of Missouri. We have some of the biggest, we have some of the most gun rights in the country. Something like that would never pass here. But we're seeing Republicans across the country get on board with this. What is going on with that? What is in it for Republicans to be okay with red flag laws?
It was the boo-hoo brigade. You know, you take a tragedy, you politicize it. There was a shooting in Colorado yesterday where one student was killed, and they had held a vigil last night. And at the vigil, two Democratic anti-gun lawmakers decided to turn it into an anti-gun rally, and then they brought up another anti-gun speaker. There were students and parents who were there who walked out because they said, we were not meant to be used for this political rally. We don't agree with this speech. We're here to honor the person who was slain and the victims of this gun violence. And people just, you know what it is? Again, it's a plea to emotion, and, you know, nobody wants to see kids get shot. Nobody is for that. You know, as a matter of fact, one of the victims of the Parkland shooting last weekend literally accused me of wanting people to be attacked with guns. Jeez. Which is, you know, the kind of hyperbole that we're seeing now, but we can't give into it. I mean, the thing is, you know, we've gone soft, Tony. This country has gone soft, and they can't take it. Every time something bad happens, and the media makes it worse because it's all compounded and sent to our smartphones immediately, so it's in the front of our brains, right? If it bleeds, it leads. You know, in the 1970s was a funny little catchphrase for the few people that watched the nightly news. But for the rest of society and culture who were not engaged with what was happening around the world, you know, we didn't have the same kind of stress. And when bad things didn't happen, people understood that there were crazy people in the world. Maybe it was a mental health issue, and maybe it still is. But the fact is that we've gone soft. So we're allowing the feminized version of society to dominate so much to a degree that we value feelings over facts. And that's spread out through our entire society. And that's not aimed at gender. It's just aimed at the concept that the masculine balance to it, which is that we have to be strong in the face of danger, we have to be resistant to tyranny, and we have to be offensive against encroachments, not only to our rights, but also offensive against violence in our communities. You know, just like the 9/11 hijackers, people say, well, we need the TSA because we haven't had a hijacking since 9/11. Well, that's because, you know, up until 9/11, everybody was told that they need to sit down and they need to shut up and let the terrorists, you know, do the negotiation process. Well, once we realized that suicide bombers were there, what did we do? We reinforced cockpit doors and we armed pilots and we got more sheriffs in the air marshals. Mm-hmm. But why is it that we guard our banks and our government buildings with armed guards with guns, but we're not willing to do that with our kids, or we get touchy about it, or we talk about arming teachers, we think there's going to be more mass slaughters? The safest school in the United States is in Texas, and it has a sign outside that says these teachers are armed and will defend these kids. That's the attitude you got to have, Tony. Yeah. That's resistance to tyranny, whether it's an individual who's acting tyrannically, a mass murderer, or whether it's the government itself.
No gunman is going to walk into a school with a sign out front that says our teachers are armed.
It's just not going to happen. But you have a gun-free zone, and it's just like candy, leaving out candy.
So, and it's, I see this not just in the gun debate. I see this across the board with a lot of conservative politicians. It always seems like conservatives on whatever issue are willing to, they think, okay, let's just do a little bit of negotiating. We'll give the other side a little bit more than we really want to. But once we give them this, then they'll stop and we can move on to something else. But they never stop. They take and they keep trying to take more. It's a bad.
Yeah, that's why people think I'm crazy when I'm like, you know, legal. It's time to deregulate machine guns, and it's time for us to do that. Yeah, this is the tactic the left is using in order to encroach on our rights. This is the Fabian socialist strategy, which is, you know, creeping big government through small incremental changes. We need to start having creeping small government through incremental changes, and that means you're going to have to actually overshoot the target. You know, read Donald Trump, art of the deal, always ask for more than you think you can get. I'm tired of playing defense on this issue. I'm not afraid. And I'm not ashamed to say that I think that the average citizen ought to be able to walk into a store, and if they have $15,000, then they should be able to buy a machine that they could probably legally make in their mill for $1,000 or $500 that the criminals are going to get anyway. But when you watch the Venezuelan police roll and tank and APCs over their civilians, you wonder, why can't I own a rocket launcher?
Right. You know what? I want to expand this conversation a little bit. We're talking to Austin Peterson. Aaron Tarlow is not here to keep me on point, so I want to expand this conversation a little bit of off of guns for a second, but it still, I think, has a relevancy to everything that we do. Austin, you, like I mentioned, you were the runner-up in the Libertarian Party for their presidential nomination in 2016. That was, of course, Gary Johnson, who ended up getting that on the ticket. How important is it? When will we ever see a legitimate third party? I am very libertarian minded, as you know, like you are. I am sick of the way Republicans do things, and I'm sick of the way Democrats think. So when will we ever be able to create a legitimate third party in this country?
Not looking good right now, and that has to do with opportunities missed. There were, in my opinion, there were two big opportunities missed for any kind of a third party movement that would really be able to be outside the two major parties. And it started with the Tea Party. There was talk of the Tea Party's turning into a third party. Of course, the Republican Party immediately started, subsuming that movement, right? Taking it over, astroturfing it, putting their institutions and leaders as the mouthpieces of the movement. So that didn't last too long, but of course it did morph into the economic nationalist movement, the populist movement of Donald Trump, which I'll get into in just a moment. So the first opportunity was the Tea Party. And the second opportunity, in my opinion, I know I'm biased, but was the 2016 Libertarian presidential nomination.
I agree with you.
Two historically unliked candidates. All that the third party candidate, the Libertarian Party candidate, needed to do, in my opinion, in 2016, was be a sane, rational, and intelligible, communicable person who was someone who was responsible, maybe a bit edgy, having that, I told the libertarians in 2016, and I was the only one who said anything nice about Trump, even though we all criticized him, is that Donald Trump had something that the libertarians needed. He had courage. He had gusto. He had chutzpah. He had the kind of courage that people admired. I think that's why he ended up winning the presidency. But the libertarians squandered that opportunity with Governor Gary Johnson. The problem, of course, is just that they thought, the strategy was, let's present someone who has experience in government, who's been tried before, and they didn't get the sort of meme culture that was building up into 2016, so they let that pass by in the name of respectability when people really just wanted the craziest SOB in the room. We probably could have gotten 10-15% in the debates if I had been the candidate, simply because I would have been respectable, I would have been intelligible, I would have known what Aleppo was. But, we can't relitigate that. The third-party question, the problem is that the Trump movement kind of is an alternative political movement, even though it's gone mainstream. It still has aspects of that. But it's not the Tea Party. It's not taxed enough already. We don't hear anything about the budgets or the deficits or the spending from the Trump administration. We don't hear Republicans come banging on the door and saying, hey, we want to cut spending. Republicans, so much better for limited government when they have no power to change the government, when they're out of power. So now that the Republican Party controls the government, third party opportunities right now are looking pretty slim. The best opportunity that most quote unquote conservatives have right now is to work with people in the Trump administration who have some very strong independent streaks. I think you have to admit that. Trump has some very independent streaks, which I think are healthy, and I think he needs to be encouraged, and some of his instincts are very good and need to be encouraged. But some of his other instincts are very non-libertarian and he has hired some establishment people, John Bolton and others. But I mean, the bad news is that, having been in third party politics as long as I have, Tony, the appetite's just not there. Yeah. And the people of the United States, they're not ready for it and they're not willing to vote for it, brother.
Yeah, I know, but we got to keep on fighting the fight. I agree with you. A huge missed opportunity in 2016. Huge. Last question for you, Austin. I know we're almost out of time. I have ruffled a few feathers here recently saying that I think that I'm not necessarily in 2020, But I think that this push to the extreme left by Democrats and this push towards socialism is not what we saw with the Tea Party as a fad that sort of took over the party for a couple of years and then faded away. I feel like they have staying power simply because of the indoctrination of the young people that are fueling the momentum that the socialists have. I feel like we are eventually going to elect somebody with that extreme left view before we realize how bad it is. I think it's going to take it going all the way to electing a president that has those socialist views for everybody, and then for everything to crash, and for us to, before we realize, oh my gosh, this is a terrible, what a terrible decision. Do you agree? Do you have a brighter outlook than I do, or do you think?
No, Tony. Unfortunately, dark days ahead, my friend. These are the times when the good wizards have got to get together and form a clan of Aurors. I don't know if you're a Harry Potter fan, but quite frankly, Voldemort's on the loose, brother.
Yeah.
And
I know it.
You know, right? We don't have any chosen ones at the moment.
Yeah. Austin Peterson, always great to talk with you. One more time, how can people hear you every day on the radio and, of course, follow you on social media, all that good stuff?
Hey, Tony, you're good, buddy. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience. KWOS News Radio in Jefferson City. It's the morning show, 6 to 9 a.m., me and my buddy John Marsh. We're rocking it 3 hours a day, 6 to 9 a.m. The KWOS Morning Show Facebook page, we live stream that. And you can always tune in at the KWOS News app on your iPhone or Android. I'm on social media sometimes when I'm not banned, at AP for Liberty. AP, the number 4, AP for Liberty. Hit me up there, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks a lot, Tony. Have a great weekend.
All right, Austin, great talking with you. That's Austin Peterson. Always great to talk with him here on Second Amendment Radio, FM News Talk 97.1. We got to take a break. When we get back, we're going to play you that conversation that we had last week. Very fascinating stuff from Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County. Don't go anywhere. We'll play that for you next here on Second Amendment Radio, FM News Talk 97.1. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio on FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here with my partner Aaron Tarlow from Southern Armory. Chad Ellis, the producer on the Wheels of Steel. Now, at break, I heard you were playing different songs, and I heard Aaron say, "That's a good one, Chad."
That's a good
one. That's not the one you're playing.
That's not the one I said. Hey, you know what? Of course not.
We have to save the best for last.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm
there
with you. You know what I just realized? You know, I'm in a different seat because we've got an awesome guest I'm super excited about. But my cough button is right here for this microphone,
right?
And the one for that microphone is
over there.
So last week I was coughing and I kept hitting
the wrong button.
I was like, oh, that's really weird. I can still hear myself in here. And I'm like, oh, maybe they can just hear me. It's not getting recorded.
Right. Well, no, you were hitting the wrong button.
Oh, yeah, I was hitting the wrong button.
So you just mentioned our awesome guest joining us in studio, as we mentioned in the last segment. Jefferson County Sheriff Dave Marshak is here with us. Sheriff, thanks so much for joining us today. How's it going?
I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys.
Yeah, I was super excited. I guess I should kind of explain how this happens. I follow Sheriff Marshak on Facebook and on Twitter, and he tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
What is the proper
tweeted
term? Tweeted. He tweeted out something that I thought was really awesome. So of course I had to send him a direct message and was like, "Hey, Sheriff,
you want to come on the radio?
Yeah, you want to come on the radio show?" He's like, "Who are you?"
And which tweet was that?
That was the Red Flag Law.
Yes,
and that was they kind of killed it and then added it as an amendment over to another bill, and then it'll
rear its ugly head again. It'll rear its ugly head again, and if it doesn't this session, it will again.
Yeah.
And the tweet you made reference to was me kind of bragging about Rob Vescovo, and he's a leader in the Missouri House, and he's looking out for those who are interested in protecting our rights.
Uh-huh.
And so I gave him a little shout out, and I said, I appreciate his hard work. He was able to kind of knock off a bill before it ever really went too far.
Awesome.
But those things will they'll pop up again. The fight's not over.
I agree.
And it's something that we constantly have to be vigilant and keep in mind that there's those people out there that are going to, at any cost, try to make changes that impact our Second Amendment rights.
Yep, absolutely. And I want to just give a quick, we talk about red flag laws on this show probably more than any other radio show, maybe in the country.
Right, I would say it's
certainly in the area.
The top two topics on this show are suppressors
and
red flag laws. Those are the two that we talk about a lot.
But just in case people are wondering exactly what a red flag law is, this is basically these laws that we see popping up all over the country. Some make national news when they happen. And Sheriff, if I get anything wrong, feel free to jump in and correct me. But essentially, they all have their own nuances throughout the country. But essentially, it boils down to this ability for someone to file a complaint against a gun owner that they go and they claim that the gun owner is somehow dangerous to themselves or others. And without the gun owner's knowledge of this happening, a court order is given for the police to come over and take those weapons away, again, without any knowledge of the person who's got this complaint filed against him, until the officers are knocking on his or her door, telling him to give up his firearms, and then you lose your guns, and then you can begin the process of trying to get them back. You have to go and fight. You have to go and file an appeal and go into court and try to get your guns back. So you are literally guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. So we see situations where there's a family fight or maybe an ugly divorce, and people have used these red flag laws to stick it to somebody that they don't like or a neighbor that they don't like.
I've said it's legal swatting, and that was a term that came up Xbox players and I guess PlayStation players would like get mad at another player and then call in a.
So in a nutshell, did I get it right, Sheriff?
Yeah, it's pretty concise. You know, I call it an unfunded mandate for law enforcement purposes. It's an unfunded mandate that could violate our Constitution in an attempt to prevent a hypothetical situation that would probably otherwise occur just without a gun.
Now, here's the surprise. We have seen, you just illustrated how lucky we are in the state of Missouri that we have a Republican supermajority. We have a lot of people in Jefferson City that are very pro Second Amendment, very pro gun rights. Missouri, in general, is a very Second Amendment friendly state, much unlike our neighbors in Illinois, who have a much harder time than we do. However, there are other states around the country that have Republicans in both the Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate and the governor's mansion that are still passing these red flag laws. And we see sometimes the NRA and law enforcement from time to time on the side of these people that are supporting these red flag laws, which to me is always shocking. So just, Sheriff, in your words, why are red flag laws dangerous and unconstitutional, at least in my opinion, they are.
So I would have to put it in perspective in terms of every law that has been presented is a little bit different. And so it might vary in title, and I think the substance might vary a little bit. And so I'd have to look at each individual piece of legislation. But I can tell you, in the state of Missouri, the legislation that has been proposed does not allow for due process. And that's probably one of the biggest concerns, is that, you know, you mentioned the fact that any person with a close relationship can, you know, file one of these complaints or one of these orders. Have you ever had a buddy that had a crazy girlfriend?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Or gone through a contentious divorce?
Yeah. So, and, you know, in my years of law enforcement, I've encountered numerous situations in which persons will file false claims. And, you know, later on, there's evidence to suggest that. But the fact is, you're not allowing gun owners due process when this happens. And it's, if you look at our Constitution and then the way that these laws are under the, you know, auspice of, you know, preventing some potential hypothetical tragedy that nobody could predict later,
right.
It's a problem. And we're not into you know, this isn't the Minority Report movie where we can predict what's going to happen in the future, and we shouldn't be taking away people's Second Amendment rights on the hypothetical possibilities of right. a situation happening later with a gun. Mm-hmm. And that's probably my biggest issue.
What is it? What? How do you react when you see other members of law enforcement getting behind these, or the NRA in certain situations getting behind these red flag laws? Like, where are they going wrong in their interpretation of these things?
You know, I don't know where people go wrong sometimes. you know, how the train leaves the track sometimes. I mean, I think a lot of times people respond to crisis situations in an emotional way, not in a pragmatic way. And, you know, when we look at legislation, we have to look at it from a couple of different perspectives, particularly those that are going to enforce it later, right? It's the same way I view a policy for the sheriff's office. You know, I will look at the Constitution first, and that's the foremost priority, number one. We'll look at local laws, and then after that, how it impacts our standards in law enforcement for maybe accreditation. But any policy has to be realistic with the resources that are in place. And law enforcement agencies do not have the resources to do this imaginary, you know, to enforce these imaginary, mm-hmm. well, that didn't come out right. So I don't,
I
lost track a little bit, but I will tell you that in terms of our policies.
Yeah, broad, you can't be in everybody's home and everybody, you know, you can't, it's too broad.
As sheriff, I have to make sure that both the policies are enforceable and that
yes.
our officers have the resources
yes.
and the capabilities to enforce that.
To do it. Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that I cannot imagine the complexities that arise as a result of some of this legislation that is created. Because I can tell you that from a law enforcement perspective, if a red flag law was actually in place in Jefferson County, for example, more than 700 times annually, a suicidal person will call for help.
Mm-hmm.
So more than 700 times a deputy responds.
That's twice a day for people trying to do the quick math.
Right.
Yeah, you know.
Right. And, you know, we already struggle with the mental health aspect from a law enforcement perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are asking, you know, our police officers to attempt to further diagnose and decide whether this person actually should even own a firearm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Talking to Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, you know, I always like to tell the story that we heard originally from our friends at the Missouri Firearms Coalition about a situation up in New York just this past Thanksgiving where a brother and a sister.
Maryland, wasn't it?
Oh, was it Maryland? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it was Northeast. So, brother and a sister who are grown, I think they were in their 50s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each of them together over Thanksgiving. And the brother is a conservative gun owner, Trump supporter, and gets into an argument with his liberal-leaning sister.
Like non-physical. Just,
yeah, just
you know,
an argument. Just a family argument over Thanksgiving.
Philosophical debate.
Absolutely, even though you're not supposed to you know, do that. You're not supposed to have those dinner conversations about politics. And the sister gets mad at the brother and calls a red flag law on him. The police show up, things go bad, and the guy ends up getting shot and killed. Then the sister is mad at the police for killing him, saying, he wasn't a threat. I was just mad at him, and I knew that taking his guns away would really
get him
stick
back.
It to him. And so that right there, that's enough. From that one story is enough for me to say we need to rethink
Absolutely.
The way that we look at these red flag laws. Is there any changes that could be made to the bill that would allow you to get on board, Sheriff? Or is this just from top to bottom a bad idea?
I think it's bad policy. You know, I think that we as a society are looking for a way to prevent tragedies. And unfortunately, we are in a constant struggle because the people that believe by, you know, kind of trampling on our Second Amendment rights, somehow this will stop these tragedies, and it's not. You know, the fact is we have a mental health situation in our country that is underfunded, and we deal with it every single day. But to believe that, you know, taking away access to firearms or somehow prevent any other tragedy is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I mean, again, we're blaming a firearm for all the tragedies that happen in our country. We are constantly looking to blame somebody and to put blame somewhere else and trying to rationalize how something could happen. And the easiest fallback is to go back onto a firearm.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? You may not know the statistic, but when your officers respond to a assault, what's the statistics for guns versus a knife versus a like a tool, baseball bat, golf club, something like that? Is firearm pretty down the list?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, in terms of general assaults, mm-hmm. yes. I think one of the statistics that I am familiar with was, you know, in terms of suicides, mm-hmm. right? In Jefferson County last year, we had 52 suicides.
Okay.
And so oftentimes people will claim, you know, in this red flag law, for example, right? The person may be in danger.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the argument. Well, you know, if you're going to prevent them from being in danger, they probably shouldn't operate a motor vehicle because that's twice as likely. We lose many more citizens as a result of motor vehicle crashes than we do in terms of firearms. But if you look at our county alone, in the last 5 days, we've had 5 suicides. Only one of them was from a firearm.
Well,
right.
The other one was pills. And
so you had pills. You had a small engine where somebody brought a small engine to their bedroom.
Yeah.
And, another one was in a garage. And if you look at the different ways, I mean, some of the arguments that we have to protect people, we have to take away their guns for their own protection. The reality is if they're going to be motivated to commit suicide,
they're going
to
find a way.
They're going to figure out something else other than a gun. And I think sometimes.
Don't go anywhere. We'll play that for you next here on Second Amendment Radio. FM News Talk 97.1. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio on FM News Talk 97.1. Tony Colombo here with my partner Aaron Tarlow from Southern Armory. Chad Ellis, the producer on the Wheels of Steel. Now, at break, I heard you were playing different songs, and I heard Aaron say, "That's a good one, Chad."
That's a good
and that's
one.
Not the one you're
that's
playing.
That's not the one I said. Hey, you know what? Of course not.
We have to save the best for last.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm
there
with you. You know what I just realized? You know, I'm in a different seat because we've got an awesome guest I'm super excited about. But my cough button is right here for this microphone,
right?
And the one for that microphone is
over there.
So last week I was coughing and I kept hitting
the wrong button.
I was like, oh, that's really weird. I can still hear myself in here. And I'm like, oh, maybe they can just hear me. It's not getting recorded.
Right. Well, you were hitting the wrong button.
Oh, yeah, I was hitting the wrong button.
So you just mentioned our awesome guest joining us in studio, as we mentioned in the last segment. Jefferson County Sheriff Dave Marshak is here with us. Sheriff, thanks so much for joining us today. How's it going?
I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys.
Yeah, I was super excited. I kind of explain how this happens. I follow Sheriff Marshak on Facebook and on Twitter, and he tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
What is the proper
tweeted?
Term? Tweeted. He tweeted out something that I thought was really awesome. So of course I had to send him a direct message and was like, "Hey, Sheriff,
you want to come on the radio?
You want to come on the radio show?" He's like, "Who are you?"
And which tweet was that?
That was the red flag law.
Yes,
and that was they were. They kind of killed it and then added it as an amendment over to another another bill, and then it'll
rear its ugly head again. It'll rear its ugly head again, and if it doesn't this session, it will again.
Yeah.
And the tweet you made reference to was me kind of bragging about Rob Vescovo, and he's a leader in the Missouri House, and he's looking out for those who are interested in protecting our rights.
Uh-huh.
And so I gave him a little shout out and I said, I appreciate his hard work. He was able to kind of knock off a bill before it ever really went too far.
Awesome.
But those things will they'll pop up again. The fight's not over.
I agree.
And it's something that we constantly have to be vigilant and keep in mind that there's those people out there that are going to, at any cost, try to make changes that impact our Second Amendment rights.
Yep, absolutely. And I want to just give a quick, we talk about red flag laws on this show more than any other radio show, maybe in the country.
Right, I would say it's
certainly in the area.
The top two topics on this show are suppressors
and
red flag laws. Those are the two that we talk about a lot.
But just in case people are wondering exactly what a red flag law is, this is basically these laws that we see popping up all over the country. Some make national news when they happen. And Sheriff, if I get anything wrong, feel free to jump in and correct me. But essentially, they all have their own nuances throughout the country. But essentially, it boils down to this ability for someone to file a complaint against a gun owner that they go and they claim that the gun owner is somehow dangerous to themselves or others, and without the gun owner's knowledge of this happening, a court order is given for the police to come over and take those weapons away, again, without any knowledge of the person who's got this complaint filed against him, until the officers are knocking on his or her door, telling him to give up his firearms, and then you lose your guns, and then you can begin the process of trying to get them back. You Absolutely. Have to go and fight. You have to go and file an appeal and go into court and try to get your guns back. So you are literally guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. So we see situations where there's a family fight or maybe an ugly divorce, and people have used these red flag laws to stick it to somebody that they don't like or a neighbor that they don't like.
I've said it's legal swatting, and that was a term that came up
swatting,
in Xbox players, and I guess PlayStation players would like get mad at mm-hmm. another player and then call in a.
So, in a nutshell, did I get it right, Sheriff?
Yeah, it's pretty concise. You know, I call it an unfunded mandate for law enforcement purposes. It's
Definitely.
An unfunded mandate that could violate our Constitution in an attempt to prevent a hypothetical situation that would probably otherwise occur just without a gun.
Now, here's the surprise. We have seen, you just illustrated how lucky we are in the state of Missouri that we have a Republican supermajority. We have a lot of people in Jefferson City that are very pro Second Amendment, very pro gun rights. Missouri, in general, is a very Second Amendment friendly state, much unlike our neighbors in Illinois, who have a much harder time than we do. However, there are other states around the country that have Republicans in both the Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate and the governor's mansion that are still passing these red flag laws. And we see sometimes the NRA and law enforcement from time to time on the side of mm-hmm. these people that are supporting these red flag laws, which to me is always shocking. So just, Sheriff, in your words, why are red flag laws dangerous and unconstitutional, at least in my opinion, they are.
So I would have to put it in perspective in terms of every law that has been presented is a little bit different. And so it might vary in title, and I think the substance might vary a little bit. And so I'd have to look at each individual piece of legislation. But I can tell you, in the state of Missouri, the legislation that has been proposed does not allow for due process. And mm-hmm. and that's probably one of the biggest concerns, is that, you know, you mentioned the fact that any person with a close relationship can, you know, file one of these complaints or one of these orders. Have you ever had a buddy that had a crazy girlfriend?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Or gone through a contentious divorce?
Yeah. So, and, you know, in my years of law enforcement, I've encountered numerous situations in which persons will file false claims. And, you know, later on, there's evidence to suggest that. But the fact is, you're not allowing gun owners due process when this happens. And it's if you look at our Constitution and then the way that these laws are under the, you know, auspice of, you know, preventing some potential hypothetical tragedy that nobody could predict later,
right.
It's a problem. And we're not into, you know, this isn't the Minority Report movie where we can predict what's going to happen in the future. And we shouldn't be taking away people's Second Amendment rights on the hypothetical possibilities of right. a situation happening later with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably my biggest issue.
What is it? How do you react when you see other members of law enforcement getting behind these or the NRA in certain situations getting behind these red flag laws? Like, where are they going wrong in their interpretation of these things?
You know, I don't know where where people go wrong sometimes. you know, how the train leaves the track sometimes. I mean, I think a lot of times people respond to crisis situations in an emotional way, not in a pragmatic way. And, you know, when we look at legislation, we have to look at it from a couple of different perspectives, particularly those that are going to enforce it later, right? It's the same way I view a policy for the sheriff's office. You know, I will look at the Constitution first, and that's the foremost priority number one. We'll look at local laws, and then after that, how it impacts our standards in law enforcement for maybe accreditation. But any policy has to be realistic with the resources that are in place. And law enforcement agencies do not have the resources to do this imaginary, you know, to enforce these imaginary, well, that didn't come out right, so I don't.
I
lost track a little bit, but I will tell you that in terms of our policies,
broad. You can't be in everybody's home and everybody. You know, you can't. It's too broad.
As sheriff, I have to make sure that both the policies are enforceable and that our officers have the resources and the capabilities to enforce them. I will tell you that I cannot imagine the complexities that arise as a result of some of this legislation that is created. Because I can tell you that from a law enforcement perspective, if a red flag law was actually in place in Jefferson County, for example, more than 700 times annually, a suicidal person will call for help. So more than 700 times a deputy responds.
That's twice a day for people trying to do the quick math.
Right.
Yeah,
you know. Right. And, you know, we already struggle with the mental health aspect from a law enforcement perspective. And now we are asking, you know, our police officers to attempt to further diagnose and decide whether this person actually should even own a firearm.
Right.
Talking to Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, you know, I always like to tell the story that we heard originally from our friends at the Missouri Firearms Coalition about a situation up in New York just this past Thanksgiving where a brother and a sister.
Maryland, wasn't it?
Oh, was it Maryland? Okay. Yeah. I knew it was Northeast. So, brother and a sister who are grown, I think they were in their 50s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each of them together over Thanksgiving. And the brother is a conservative gun owner, Trump supporter, and gets into an argument with his liberal-leaning sister.
Like non-physical. Just,
yeah, just
you know,
an argument. Just a family argument over Thanksgiving.
Philosophical debate.
Yeah, absolutely, even though you're not supposed to you know, do that. You're not supposed to have those dinner conversations about politics. And the sister gets mad at the brother and calls a red flag law on him. The police show up, things go bad, and the guy ends up getting shot and killed. Then the sister is mad at the police for killing him, saying he wasn't a threat. I was just mad at him, and I knew that taking his guns away would really
get him
stick
back.
It to him. And so that right there, that's enough. From that one story is enough for me to say we need to rethink the way that we look at these red flag laws. Is there any changes that could be made to the bill that would allow you to get on board, Sheriff? Or is this just from top to bottom a bad idea?
I think it's bad policy. You know, I think that we as a society are looking for a way to prevent tragedies. And unfortunately, we are in a constant struggle because the people that believe by, you know, kind of trampling on our Second Amendment rights, somehow this will stop these tragedies, and it's not. You know, the fact is we have a mental health situation in our country is underfunded, and we deal with it every single day. But to believe that, you know, taking away access to firearms will somehow prevent any other tragedy is ridiculous. And that's the thing. I mean, again, we're blaming a firearm for all the tragedies that happen in our country. We are constantly looking to blame somebody and to put blame somewhere else and trying to rationalize how something could happen. And the easiest fallback is to go back onto a firearm.
Yeah. I mean, can I ask you a question? You may not know the statistic, but when your officers respond to a assault, what's the statistics for guns versus a knife versus a like a tool, a baseball bat, golf club, something like that? Is firearm pretty down the list?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, in terms of general assaults, mm-hmm. yes. You know, okay. but I think one of the, statistics that I am familiar with was, you know, in terms of suicides, mm-hmm. right? In Jefferson County last year, we had 52 suicides.
Okay.
And so oftentimes people will claim, you know, in this red flag law, for example, right? The person may be in danger.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the argument. Well, you know, if you're going to prevent them from being in danger, they probably shouldn't operate a motor vehicle because right. that's twice as likely. We lose yeah. many more citizens as a result of motor vehicle crashes than right. we do in terms of firearms. But if you look at our county alone, in the last 5 days, we've had 5 suicides. Only one of them was from a firearm. Well, right.
The other one was pills. And
so you had pills. You had a small engine where somebody brought a small engine to their bedroom.
Yeah.
And, another one was in a garage. And if you look at the different ways, I mean, some of the arguments that we have to protect people, we have to take away their guns for their own protection. The reality is, if they're going to be motivated to commit suicide,
they're
going to
find a way.
They're going to figure out something else other than a gun. And I think sometimes it can just increase the likelihood of a lethal confrontation as a result of law enforcement trying to take away a firearm rather than, you know, using other resources to accomplish that goal.
Let's say red flag laws got passed. Would you guys even have the ability to store that many guns?
Listen, the courts go door to door. It has to be funded. The courts don't have the resources to accommodate that. You know, I can tell you that our courts struggle to process the cases they have now.
Right.
How? In just to Aaron's point, and then we need to take a break. But Sheriff isn't going anywhere, so we'll have plenty
more.
Glad to be here with you guys.
Last question on this red flag law situation. Just the realistic, from a realistic resources standpoint. You, as sheriff, if your guys are out enforcing red flag laws and taking these complaints and going on knocking on doors and trying to take guns, how naked does that leave the rest of the county when they should be out, you know, enforcing, you know, law, protecting people?
It places an impossible burden on us.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. You know, if you look at a search warrant now, uh-huh. right? Law enforcement officers, particularly our tactical team, is in a situation where we do a risk assessment. And the risk assessment is done to protect not only law enforcement, it's there to protect citizens. It is there to protect a suspect or person who's committed a violation. Because, you know, law enforcement officers do not want to make a critical decision involving, say, a possible gunfight next to a school.
Right.
Right. Other citizens are at risk. And so they do a risk assessment to make sure that they're going to be as safe as possible. There's some level of surveillance. And again, we try to mitigate risk. That's a lot of resources that go into prior to any execution of a search warrant. If you're talking an additional, you know, 700 or plus complaints, we simply don't have the resources for that.
And that is Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County. Great to talk with the sheriff. Thank you so much for your time. Follow Sheriff Dave at Sheriff Marshak on Twitter. And that is going to do it for another edition of Second Amendment Radio. For my partner, Aaron Tarlow, our producer, Chad Ellis, I'm Tony Colombo. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next Saturday right back here at 3 o'clock on FM News Talk 97.1.